For almost her entire adult life, Diana Ploss was a Massachusetts Democrat. But back in 2013, things started changing for Diana. She felt the country wasn't moving in the right direction, so she registered as a Republican. She later quit her job and volunteered full-time for Donald Trump's presidential campaign. I spoke with Diana Ploss yesterday, a week after Donald Trump became president-elect, and she began by telling me how she felt after Trump won the White House.
I think it was a couple days after the election because I was so tired working on it. I did kind of like, yes, okay? But my yes was more like, for America, like a sigh of relief. I don't feel smug. I don't feel like, ugh, we beat the other side. Uh-huh. That's never how I thought. Now, I feel like America was on a cliff. I feel like we're pulled back a little bit. We can regroup. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is not a time to gloat. This is a time to, we're a team.
But you know that there are a lot of people right now who are feeling like they are not part of the team because they're frightened and they're worried and they're scared about what a Trump administration means to them personally in their lives. I'm thinking about people of color, the LGBT community, immigrants. What would you say to them?
Well, the thing is, for some reason, it seemed like polls weren't feeling the pulse of what was really happening with people who supported Trump. And I think it came as a shock to people who were reading. If you just read one part of media and you're listening to leaders, even Obama said Trump won't be president. This one said Trump won't be president. So, of course, it comes as a shock to people, right?
Well, I think people are feeling a sense of shock and concern because of what
he
the president elects, even
what they
himself,
think he,
well, what he said during the election. But then there's also this. Just recently, the president elect named Steve Bannon,
yes,
of Breitbart News, as his role is going to be as chief strategist for the White House. Now, Breitbart has been, you know, a major megaphone for white nationalists. That is one of the reasons that people point to, like, that's why they're concerned.
So what I would encourage people to do is to read about Mr. Bannon. I always take exception to whether somebody says, like, white nationalists. Like, what does that mean exactly? I don't know what that means, white nationalists. What is that? I don't understand what that means.
Well, I think it means there's a group of people out there who believe that America should be a white nation. They want the white race to be, you know, the privileged race in this country. It is about race.
Is that what Steve believes?
Well, he's done nothing to disavow the people who do say it explicitly.
I don't want the country to be all white. And I know many of the Trump supporters who aren't white don't want the country to be all white. Like Chinese Americans for Trump, huge group. Why did they come out for Trump?
Yeah.
The Haitian community.
So, Diana, those are all good questions, but let me just phrase it this way. And I also then want to get
but
to
But I do want to answer your question.
Yeah. Well, so go ahead.
Okay. So Trump supporters are not a group of white nationalists. We're a very varied group of people.
Yeah.
We're not monsters. We believe in America, and we believe in America first. What is so wrong with that?
I think the thing that people struggle with is there was a writer who put it this way. One particular supporter of Mr. Trump may not be a white nationalist, but by saying that the things that Donald Trump said as a candidate and the choices he might make as president, which do hew closer to white nationalist thinking, by saying that that stuff doesn't bother them, that it makes it hard to say that they're not inadvertently supporting.
Right, but how do you know who's going to follow you? You just can't, because what's the difference? Hillary Clinton had supported Black Lives Matter, and a lot of them have done not such good things.
While what you're saying, I think some people listening probably would object to it, I want to ask you about how President-elect Trump can lead. You know, because, for example, the Southern Poverty Law Center has already documented 200.
I don't believe them.
I do.
I don't believe them.
You don't believe that FBI has even said there's been a spike in hate crimes against Muslim Americans.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has a reputation of preying on people.
Do you disagree with the FBI saying that there's been a spike in hate crimes against Muslim Americans?
I'd have to look at the statistics. I haven't seen them. I mean, they might be new statistics for the last week. I don't buy it.
Come back to your analogy of America as a team. If we take, you know, President-elect Trump is now like, he's like the coach of the team. He's leading the team now.
If the team feels so divided, what should the coach be saying? What should the leader of the team be saying to bring that team together?
What he has come out and said that he wants people to stop that, and he was interviewed on 60 Minutes. Well, he's not the president yet. I feel like Obama has to be the leader. He's the leader right now. He is the leader. People look up to him. He's still the president. Obama needs to get out there, and he has to quell this stuff. Because who are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to Trump right now? Uh-uh.
Well, they're not. But the folks who voted for him would listen to the president-elect.
Yes, but I would argue with you, but not in an argumentative way.
You can. This is an open table.
Right, but that's not the problem. Believe me, I am not trying to minimize people. I'm not. But you have to take a step back. It is going to be okay. Yeah. It really is going to be okay. It is.
So one more question about Washington. So you mentioned about draining the swamp, as Donald Trump said he'd like to do when he was a candidate for the White House. There seems to be some debate as to whether or not that's actually happening, right? Because just today in the Boston Globe, there was a big article about how lobbyists, in fact, may be more excited than ever about their opportunities in Washington now, because there will be a Republican in the White House and in the Senate and the House of Representatives. This could be the gravy train for lobbyists. Does that concern you?
It doesn't. You know what concerns me more is that people write stories like that.
The Globe was quoting actual lobbyists who were saying this.
Right. But what I'm saying is, just because that's what they're saying and that's what they're hoping doesn't make it a fact. There are so many intertwinings, connections of people. That's the swamp. There's so many people tied into one another. And okay, well, if I do this, it benefits this one. If I do that, right? And that's what he's talking about. Those lobbyists, I think they're in for a rude awakening.
Now, it was at this point in our conversation that Diana's tone shifted, and she said this isn't just politics for her. It's personal. And why? Well, she started by talking about the cost of her own health insurance.
I mean, I almost want to cry.
Because of the cost of your insurance?
I canceled my insurance. I had to, because I can't afford it. I'm also supporting my father. Why? Because he only gets $1,800 a month for Social Security. His rent alone is $900. And his health care expenses are about $600. His co-pays went up. So one prescription a month that he gets went from $8 a month to $44, right? 2 years ago, my father took an overdose because he couldn't pay to live. He doesn't have enough money to live.
Your father had tried to take his own life.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, he's not a big drinker anymore. He used, you know, he doesn't drink. Bought like a bottle of scotch, was on Dilaudid for a pain thing, which he shouldn't have been on, but that's a different story. Took 24 Dilaudid, washed it down with like five drinks of scotch, and went to bed. And luckily, because my father's so good with his routine, he put his oxygen on because he has COPD and he sleeps with it. And he wasn't thinking, you know, he's drunk, he's high, whatever. And then he woke up in the morning. And fortunately, I had called him. And I was, you know, I'm a nurse and I'm listening to him. And
did he tell you why he did it?
He did tell me because he couldn't afford to live. And so that was one of my decisions to sell my house because I knew financially I couldn't work, support him, do the house, do my business. And so when I see people, even on Facebook, saying, well, what about this person? What about that person? I'm thinking, well, what about me? It's a lot of money that I give my father every month from the sale of my house, which I'm almost out of. So this is personal, right? I mean, it is personal to have to do something like that. And I'm not looking for like a pat on the back. I'm not looking for martyrdom. I'll figure it out. But I want people to know that when do we start taking care of the people that are here? Like, I need to take care of my father, and so I'm trying to figure it out, right? So now I'm canceling my health insurance, and that money's going to go to help me take care of my father. What else can I do? So I have to ask people who are listening, what about Diana's father, who has a name? His name is Richard. Doesn't his life matter? That's why I'm supporting Trump, because I really feel like, why doesn't Diana's life matter anymore? Why does somebody else's life matter more than mine? Oh, my father's.
Diana Ploss lives in Massachusetts and volunteered full-time for the Trump campaign.